A quick message before we get into this episode. On Saturday, 24th of Feb, there's going to be the first ever Asian and Aotearoa panel and podcast recording. All made possible thanks to our friends at Auckland Council. So save the date. That's Saturday, 24th of Feb, 1 p.m. More info coming soon. Kia ora, welcome to Asian and Aotearoa, a podcast of uncensored conversations with Asian creatives. I'm Jenna, and in this episode, I catch up with Jess Hong. Jess was born and raised in the Manawatū to Chinese parents, and today she's an actor based in Tāmaki Makaurau. Soon, she'll be gracing our screens in the new Netflix sci-fi epic Three Body Problem and the upcoming horror film Grafted. Enjoy. Welcome, Jess.
Thanks. Great to be here, Jess.
Stoked to have you here. To kick off, can you do a self-intro, please?
I can. I kind of expected this, and yet I did not think about it at all. Kia ora, everyone. My name is Jess Hong. I'm an actor in Tāmaki Makaurau. I was born and raised in the Manawatū. My parents are Chinese, and so is my face. And that's about the most Chinese thing about me.
Let's get into it. How would you describe your leadership?
Oh, it's interesting because I went to the Asian Diaspora Dialogues.
Did you?
Yeah, which was awesome. You were there.
I know.
You were hosting. You were emceeing like a pro. And they had that panel on leadership, right? Yeah. And people talking about leadership not just being like a role that you hold or like being in front, but often leadership being from behind. And I think because I don't really take professional leadership positions, but with my friends, you know, I often initiate like hangs or like just try to pull community together in whatever way I can, and usually a really fun way, in a very chill social way. So yeah, my leadership is more like trying to recognize other people's value and highlight that and let us come together and celebrate each other.
I like that. Leadership being about creating outcomes that matter most. Doesn't matter really what your job title is or whether people are reporting to you.
Yeah, totally. Otherwise, that's like a dictator, right? If it's just one person going, you must do this because this is the vision I have. I like, you know, when you're working in theatre or screen or whatever, everyone's got a collective vision that we're working towards. The director helps steer it that way, but they're not like telling you that has to be that way. Well, some of them do, but but I feel like the best ones are the ones that also allow other people's opinions or creativity to affect the vision so that the end product is still like the goal that we achieve together, you know?
Nice. During your time as an actor, or actually maybe in general, what kind of leaders do you look up to?
Oh, I was thinking about this today because...
You knew I was going to ask about it?
No.
Oh!
Marianne Infante just ended up on the cover of, what's that magazine called? Anyway, she's on the front page of like The Herald or something. And she said something really nice about it on IG. And I think I just look up to people who make space where there wasn't space previously. Marianne's someone like that. Chai Ling is someone like that. There are all these people that kind of paved some sort of pathway where there wasn't. Yeah. So that people like me could come in and walk this path that wasn't here before. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is amazing. So yeah, I just admire people who are willing to do their own thing and not worry about who's done it before. Because I think I get caught up in like, oh, should I do this? But what if it's not, you know, the way to do it, or would I ever fit this role? But it doesn't matter. Like, you should just go after what you want.
Is that easier said than done?
Fuck yeah. Yeah, it's hard to do.
How come?
Oh, shyness, I guess. There's also the tall poppy syndrome thing we have in Aotearoa. Yeah. There's also just like the model minority thing of like being Asian in Aotearoa. Oh my god, title of the show. So I think that all marries into this very submissive kind of way of entering the world. And I noticed this most when I was overseas. People in London or like New York, they're not afraid to put themselves out there and just be like, yeah, I'm this and that and this. I've never done these things before, but I am going to be those things. Whereas in Aotearoa, it's like you have to have worked for a decade before you can finally say, yes, I am an actor.
Yeah.
Or yes, I am this thing. I have enough proof. Look at my proof. So there's something about wanting to achieve lots of things and gain recognition before you claim your space, as opposed to claiming the space and then stacking up experience and gaining the achievements that you want, which I think we could do a little bit more of here.
Is that out of your comfort zone to do that for you?
Yeah. Hell yeah. But luckily I've met a variety of people in the last couple of years, and so I'm observing that behavior in other people.
Yeah.
And going, there's another way. I lived in New Zealand my whole life, and then I only lived in one other place. I lived in London 2021 to 2022, and I feel like I finally kind of grew up a bit in the world. Because I think here we're kind of in this little bubble of like, it's a double-sided coin. Because on one side, it's amazing that everyone's so humble, and it's amazing that you can kind of just like, you can go to a theater show all dolled up, or you can go in your sweatpants and nobody gives a fuck. It's like, just do you, you know? Whereas there's a little more expectation that you kind of present or like, you know, put your best foot forward in other places. And saying that, there's a level of ambition there that I would really like to kind of mimic's not the right word, but I just want
harness.
You're
doing this with your hands. I'm like, it looks like
harness. Yeah. Clutching. I want a bit more of that ambition, and I want to be more vocal about the things that I want. Yeah, in order to achieve them, because otherwise, I don't know. What are we doing?
What do you think would help you be more vocal?
Maybe not being afraid to say dumb shit.
Yeah.
Being less afraid. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being less hesitant.
I get it.
Yeah. Like when you post something on social media and you're like, should I? Just going and doing it.
Yeah.
You can always delete it later.
Oh, I cringe every time I post anything.
Literally, yeah. and just getting over that and just doing it without kind of worrying about what people think so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And encouraging friends and having friends encourage you back. I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. I feel like this is an exciting time of your career. How would you describe it?
Kind of surreal. Yeah, to be honest, it feels like I've acquired a double life, and that other life is like something that happens when I go away to do stuff. And so when I'm just chilling at home, you know, I'm not really thinking about it. Yeah, it's a weird one. It's just so, the world I kind of got thrust into in 2021 was so far from the world that I know, you know. You know?
I mean, I don't know personally, but no, I can imagine. Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Yeah, okay, so COVID times, a bunch of lockdowns happened, but then I got the Duffy Show, which is like kids' theatre that you go around to different schools around the country. So it's real chill. You're just like three actors on the road together doing your own pack in, pack out. Super like grassroots, super, super spiritually fulfilling. Mm. And then while I was on this tour, I auditioned for this role over in the UK, and I must have had like 8 or 9 interactions with them before they finally cast me. And then I got flown to London for a year to shoot this crazy big thing and a huge kind of machine of a workplace. And I've never lived overseas. I've never lived by myself before. And I'd never been to Europe. So it was like all big firsts.
Yeah.
Let alone the job, which was, it felt like a lot of pressure, you know. I'm so used to just like, let's hang out in a rehearsal room for 3 weeks and put this thing on for like the community. Whereas this was like, show up, get it done within the amount of time. It was a lot of adjusting.
Yeah.
There was a teething period where I was very like, who am I? What's happening?
Is this a project that's coming out next year?
This is the project coming out next year.
Okay.
Free body problem.
Yeah. So that was shot in the UK.
Yeah, we shot for 9 months.
That must have been insane.
Yeah, it was wild.
Because it's like, it's the guys that made Game of Thrones, right? Who created the show.
Yeah, David and Dan. Also Alex Wu, who wrote for True Blood for a while.
Loved True Blood.
Same, oi. Anna Paquin, represent. Yeah, it was fucking wild. But I feel so lucky because those guys, those producers, they're just super chill and nice. So I feel like that trickled down to every other department. And it meant that people were quite genuine. I'm not sure that always happens, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like some producers might be crazy. Who knows?
And because you have done some press for that show. Well, was that kind of released earlier, like 20, was it ages ago?
Low-key, it was like a, we did an event called To Doom in Brazil, which was like a 3-day, kind of like the Netflix Geeked thing that just happened online. It was a chance for the biggest fan base in Sao Paulo to come and interact and get little snippets of teasers for new things, and also see interviews with people from shows that have already come out. So it was like a full Netflix event
that
we just were part of.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, the show doesn't come out till March, so we probably won't promote anything until next year.
Yeah.
But we're like, here's the trailer. Okay, see you in 3 months.
But they just released a new trailer, I think.
Yeah. We just released
a new trailer. Which is cool, but you were in.
Yeah, I'm there.
Oh my God, so cool.
It's funny watching it. So you know how I said that double life thing? It's funny, when I watch the trailer, I'm like, oh, this show looks so cool. Who's in it?
It's you. Yeah, wild.
So yeah. And then when we do promote, however it happens, I don't know how it happens, I might go somewhere and we'll do some things and it will feel like my other life again, you know?
Right.
But I'm really stoked because I found like a really beautiful community here in Tamaki Makaurau, and I feel like it's my safe space to return to, you know? Like, this is my real life. And that's like my secondary life.
Yeah.
Like a secondary Instagram account.
Yeah. Like Hannah Montana. Aside from, just on Three Body Problem, aside from the obvious budget differences, what else did you notice that was significantly different?
I've actually never really done big screen stuff at all. Like, not even here. So everything felt new to me. I didn't know about the whole hierarchy thing with, like, cast depending on the number you are on a call sheet. That was new to me. I didn't even know what those numbers meant, you know? I didn't even know how to read a call sheet, so I was such a noob. I felt like this little bumpkin from New Zealand, this little kind of country bumpkin. But yeah, I guess in England they have way more infrastructure, right? And way more resource to kind of churn things out. So the machine was tight. The days were like succinct. We got pretty much everything we needed to do each day, unless it was like unforeseen circumstances. What else? I guess being an actor, I wasn't expecting to be followed around everywhere by ADs, assistant directors, because they have to know where you are at all times of the day when you're at work. There's just someone there just tagging along to the bathroom, you know, just tagging along to wherever you go.
What for?
To know where you are.
Oh.
To know exactly where you are.
So if you're needed.
Go into the radio. Okay, Jess is just going 10-1, which means go to the toilet. Just in her dressing room. And that was weird. That took some getting used to. Eventually, I gained their trust and I was able to go to the Wharepaku by myself. And I felt really proud in that moment. It's like, I'm a big girl. So yeah, that was a huge difference from theatre, which is mostly what I do, where you kind of, you're still a child in the room, but you're not like watched all the time. And it's also, for me, I marvel at how all the departments have to work together to go towards that collective vision. I just think that's really beautiful. In theatre, it's more obvious. There's less people. It's just all of you in a room doing it, except for like the designers who are like off slaving away in their own spaces and then coming in. But yeah, because of how many people there were, you know, there were hundreds of people on set every day, and how many departments are just constantly working and in their different studios, you don't really get to see it until these certain moments or until action, and then you're like, oh wow, it's all really coming together now.
Was it a lot of green screen?
There was a bit of blue screen, yeah. Yeah, it was blue. I was like, oh, it's really? Blue, not green.
Is it blue now?
It was blue now, apparently. Yeah, there was quite a bit at the beginning. That was wild. That was really fun. Like, you practice your imagination as an actor, but never to that scale where it's like, literally, there's nothing in the room. Okay, and blizzard! And grief, she's, oh, you're just crumbling in front of you. So I've acquired a new skill. I can, I'm really good at emoting towards tape now. Yeah, good times.
Wow. What an amazing experience. Like a different beast, massive beast.
I feel like, yeah, every project is like a new training ground, right? So it was just a crazy big
Netflix
training
beast.
Ground. Netflix boost. Netflix boost.
Have you seen any of it?
I've seen little bits doing ADR when you do the extra voice bits that they didn't get. So I've seen snippets, but nothing, not like a whole episode or anything. Yeah. So it'll be my first time, the same with everyone else. I'm so excited.
So excited. What other work projects are you excited about at the moment?
I did do a Kiwi film as well.
Like a horror, right?
A horror, yeah. It's called Grafted. Should come out next year. And it was super fun. It was wild because it was predominantly night shoots, so I turned nocturnal just for like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But the cast was so cool, the director's really cool, the whole team, again, really friendly, genuine people. amazing ensemble of like young wahine just kind of doing their thing. It's, should I say what it's about?
Can you say a little bit?
I'll say a little bit. I'm like, oh, I'm not good at blurbs. as you can tell by my intro, lol. It's like a body horror, and it's about, wait, let me start this again. Body horror is like more gross horror than horror, is my understanding. So there was some like prosthetics stuff involved.
Oh.
Yeah. A young woman comes from China and lives with her auntie and cousin here in Auckland. I play the cousin, and this young woman, the lead, played by Jojo, an actual 18-year-old, crazy. She was finishing her high school exams while filming the show. It was wild. This lead has like a birthmark, mm-hmm. a birthmark on her face that she's been insecure about since birth.
Yeah.
Or since consciousness. Her father passed away when she was young, and she just has been trying to use the science that he left behind to her to try and fix or get rid of the birthmark. So it's about kind of beauty and what lengths it drives us to in order to attain what we think is the ideal beauty standard.
Ooh.
So it's the ugly side, the gross body horror side of beauty. And then inside of that is also just like our really human need for belonging and trying to find a place where we are valued and we feel special, or we feel seen, which I think is really just like a universal theme. And there's a couple of little stunts, and there's some cool, gross horror elements.
Okay.
Oh, and the costumes are mean, the makeup's lit, and the lighting's lit.
Sounds cool.
Anyway, it's going to be really funky.
Tell me about the Dumplings and Dragons D&D play project you're a part of.
So there's a group of us led by Benjamin Tay, who is our amazing DM, Dungeon Master. I remember Ben coming and talking to me in my living room when I lived in Kingsland about like, oh, I've never DM'd before, but like I've played Dungeons and Dragons and I kind of want to start like a little casual thing with Asian artists playing D&D. I was like, yeah, that sounds dope. I'll be keen. And then like immediately he set it up and he got myself, Jen Huang, Nicholas Contreras, Ankita Singh, Mustak Missouri. Oh, Dillis Fong. All of us to be his players. None of us had ever played Dungeons and Dragons. He'd never Dungeon Mastered before, so we were all just figuring it out. But we started playing just for fun, but then also, I guess, as a way to be like, hey, we're some cool Asian nerds here in Auckland.
Yeah, I love the idea.
He records them, and then he processes it and chucks it on Spotify, YouTube, some other things that I'm sure other people know about.
I've never played D&D before, but I know people who have, who do.
Mm.
But I feel like I'm too dumb. Like, I feel like...
You know when people are... I am also like, what's happening?
You know, when someone's trying to tell me about how to play a game, I'm like, white noise. It's not sinking in.
Honestly, it's like it's new to us every single time we play.
How often do you do it?
So at the beginning, we got a few sessions in, live sessions before lockdown, the first lockdown. And then we were playing every week. And that was such a saving grace, honestly. It kind of gave me a bit of sanity and joy over the lockdown. And then things opened up. People got busy again. And because we're all creatives, we have crazy schedules. Mm. So we'd play like once every 2 or 3 or 6 months.
Yeah.
But still, we managed to get a few eps out there.
What makes D&D so popular?
I think it's the role-playing for the people who just really like improv or like to, you know, express or show some creativity.
So it's a game, but you're role-playing as...
as a character of your choosing.
Really?
Yeah. So if it's like the traditional one, then it's a fantasy world where there are like elves and goblins and dwarves and things. And,
yeah, I'm into it. Uh-huh. I love this shit, yeah.
And I got into it because I was like, yeah, this is a great chance to improv and to like maybe try an accent or do something else. So my character is Lee Dragonblood, who is like a dark elf who's really badass. And I was going to try give her an accent, but then in the end she just turned into me. She's me, but with more of an edge, you know? So it's either a chance to play someone completely different from you or to play yourself but heighten something inside you that you want to get out, you know? So in a way, it could be cathartic, I don't know. And then on the flip side, if you're just really into like world building games, yeah. then that satisfies that part of your brain, you know, which can go into the fantasy realm. And I have a little bit of that as well, so it satisfies both for me. And I think it was amazing during the pandemic because you can do it online with your friends.
Yeah.
And it was just a way for people to connect in a way that wasn't just like playing stuff on the filters on Facebook Messenger, you know?
Totally.
It's a great way to express in a way that we're not normally able to in our day-to-day lives. You know, if I just had coffee with you.
You're playing. Love it.
And I was like, all right, I'm going to go into that cave and kill all these goblins with my diamond sword. You'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But yeah, you can just unleash parts of yourself that you wouldn't be able to do in your day-to-day life.
Cool. And so is it like every time you do it, is it like, what is the aim of the thing? Like what finishes the game?
Oh, mate. I've barely scratched the surface of that world. I know that there are campaigns that go on for years.
Yeah. Shit.
If you get really into it and, you know, the whole party stays together, then essentially you could just keep going forever as long as you don't die.
It sounds like fun. You know, if I didn't have to work and earn money, I'd love to just like play games, both like actual games but also like cozy games and you know, and just watch, you know, whatever I wanted.
That's, you know. what's your favorite game?
What kind of game?
Any board or card or drinking?
I haven't played what do you call them? Like in-person game in ages.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think what the last one was. Probably, is it Codenames?
I fucking love Codenames!
I'm really fucking bad at it. There's something, right. like my brain is not wired for that game. Like I'm really bad, but it's so fun.
It's so much fun.
Hilarious.
I think it's more hilarious when people get it wrong.
Yeah, I get it wrong all the time. But I grew up with, I've got an older brother, and so it was like growing up with your PS4, your Xbox, you're playing like all of that sort of
stuff. Do you
but I don't do it now. I've got it. I mean,
she's a busy gal.
Yeah, I don't even have a TV at the moment. Although we're moving, I'm moving house soon. There's gonna be a TV there. But in my early 20s, I was addicted to Guitar Hero.
Oh, nice.
And that is
very active.
That was so fun. Yeah, if I didn't have to work, I'm telling you,
I feel like
there'd be a lot of play going on.
I feel like Guitar Hero, you like sweat. I like sweated whenever I played it as well. So it's like,
it got to the point where, you know, when you close your eyes, if you're playing a game all the time and you close your eyes and you can actually see the screen, like I can see
I've never gotten to that level. Okay. I don't play games. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've grew up in a house of four gals and we had a TV, but like, no, never had a PlayStation, played games. So
Where are you? So you've got three sisters?
I've got two sisters and my mum raised us. Yeah. Wow. Oh, woman.
Wow.
I am woman.
If you had to do a TED talk on something for 5 minutes, what would it be about?
I wouldn't. I would say no.
What?
No, okay. Oh, TED talks are freaky. I love watching them.
Do you mean like the public speaking bit you don't like? Or just...
There's something about standing up in front of people and going, I have enough expertise in this thing to talk to you all about it, just me. Even though I said before, you know, about claiming
like
space.
Linking back to that. Yeah.
You know, that subconscious thing is still there going, you don't know anything, Jessica. You don't fucking know shit. It would be acting, you know, it would be about what acting is besides a device for entertainment, what it gives to both the person doing it, but also hopefully to the audience as well. Because it can be very cathartic, it can be very, I guess, selfish in a way, especially when you're starting off. But then it can eventually be a gift that you try to share with the world, you know, and try to become a channel for more important things. Then you're just the vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you know that you wanted to be an actor?
I came into it kind of late. I was 17. And I used to be super shy and socially anxious as a kid, which people don't believe me when I say that, but because I'm so fucking loud now. But
you also play characters. Well, what I've seen you in, they're like really kind of bold, bad bitch sort of characters.
Oh, yo. I mean, going back to the D&D thing, you know, it's those parts of you that you want to unleash that you've never had a chance to before, right? Because you are this type of person in life. That is who you are. That is who you choose to be. That's how you present to the world. But then there's also this little part of you inside that's just like, nah. So yeah, my doing drama in high school was actually just a way to build confidence because I couldn't speak to people or look people in the eye back then. Like, for seriously, I could not, the way we're talking right now, I couldn't be looking at you and I would just be like, So taking drama was a way of combating that. And then I got hooked in this one moment where I was reading a monologue that I wrote in front of like everyone's parents in our theatre, I say in quotation marks because it was just the room besides the cafeteria that was our theatre. And I started crying. I was like, wait, what am I doing? I'm crying in front of all these strangers. Oh my God, this is really nice. This is really cathartic. And I was like, ah, acting is therapy. And so from then I was hooked in a very, selfish way because I wanted to use that device as a way to figure out my own stuff.
Yeah.
And then I realized, okay, I'm from Palmerston North, so I didn't even know that Palmerston North had a theatre until I was like 14 years old when we went on a drama trip. So I was very removed from arts and creativity. I didn't know it was possible to be an actor in this country. I just didn't think that was an option. So I was just doing it as a hobby, you know, as something, some way for me to express and some way for me to get those parts out that I wanted to get out. And then I discovered, oh, you can go to school for this. So I went to Poneke and I went to drama school for 3 years at Toy. And that's when it became real, like a career opportunity. But yeah, from 17 to 21, I was just doing it because I loved it so much. And I wasn't really thinking about what my career would be.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll figure out something to do for money eventually.
I think there's something special about that, about kind of not falling, because obviously you're doing the work, but kind of just following where you kind of, you're following something.
Yeah, I'm lucky because, my mum's a single parent. She barely had enough energy just to like raise us, let alone tell us what to do. So I never got the usual, you have to be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer. I didn't get those kind of pressures. So I was free to just do whatever as long as I was, you know, surviving and doing well in my own way. So yeah, I was able to just kind of follow my passion for a while until I found out that my passion could possibly lead to financial gain.
Yes.
Which is dope.
Totally. Very much. When are you most creative?
Oh, yeah, at work. It's when my synapses are firing the most, you know. I used to have other ways. I used to love just drawing or painting, writing poetry, but now that's definitely when my voice and my body and my emotions can all activate simultaneously. That's when I feel like the most yummy.
Thinking back through your long list of projects you've worked on, describe a collaboration that stands out the most.
That's really hard. Everything gives you something different, you know. Well, I guess because it's fresh and because I could see the impact it was having at the time. The first primetime Asian sitcom by wonderful Nayeon.
Shout out to Nayeon.
Shout out Nayeon and Ahilan, who directed. It felt powerful even as we were just reading the words in the rehearsal room, you know. And it was quite a hectic rehearsal, but we did still have to take the time to kind of digest and unpack everything that she was trying to put out there. And it's not like she was trying to put out answers, you know. She was just firing out questions and we were then asking ourselves those questions. Even though I feel like I have enough agency now that I can bring my voice into a room, I don't think I've ever been challenged that much by a work and asked to dig that deeply and pull out my own answers or my own forward questions. So that was really incredible. And I would leave the rehearsal room, not just tired physically, but mentally so drained because I was just very reflective, very intellectually stimulated. We were having these heated discussions, you know. I swear we had like a heated discussion for 3 days straight. maybe I'm extending that in my memory. So yeah, I would say that was very enriching in the rehearsal space. And then to put it up and to see how the community responded to it, because there were a lot of things there that were very real for people in different areas. Mm. So people,
there was a panel, wasn't there? There was a scene.
There was
a panel. I loved that.
Yo,
that was so good. That was really funny.
Yeah, everyone clicked with different things. Mm. But you know, people in the film world would be like, "Oh my god, that is so true. That's what it's like. You have to like fetishize your own freaking cultural background in order to make something commercial. Or people in like intellectual panel realm were like, yes, those people, it's always.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to get that directly, like verbally from audience after they came out or in private messages, and to feel like, oh, we're making something that's not just going to be cool for this moment. We're making someone that hopefully provides a foundation and a platform for someone else to come and jump further on top of it.
Yeah.
So that was amazing. And I felt very grateful to be a part of it.
In the onboarding form you filled out.
Yeah, I filled that out.
Before coming on the podcast, you mentioned some things about the topic self-love that you were keen to explore.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's what you said, which is great. I always love, because it's really interesting. I love the onboarding form because it kind of gives me insight into the guest, like what kind of info they give, how yeah. much, how little, when they fill it out.
I'm not going to lie, I don't really remember what I said.
No one remembers. That's the great thing. I bring it up in episodes, you're like, I've got no idea what I said, which is great. And you were like, how do you take care of yourself in this chaotic world?
Yeah.
Or dumpster fire. I said that, but yeah.
Or dumpster fire.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, how do you?
It's just a question to the world. It's not something
I know,
I've figured out.
I know you put it in there as like a putting it out there, but I'm interested in you.
Yeah. Here I am. Okay, so there's been a lot going on, you know, and there's a lot of global grief in the world right now.
Yep.
I don't really want to go into the reasons why. We all know the fucking reasons why.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of... So, okay, let me roll back to something else for context.
Yes.
I've always found it kind of hard to rest without guilt, to rest and not feel like, oh shit, I should be doing something right now. But let's say you're burnt out after a big project. Like, you deserve that rest. And if you're not doing it properly because you're worried that you shouldn't be resting, then you're not resting and you're just burnt out again. That's my starting point. And then if you add on top of that, like, a global crisis where you can see so graphically every day on your phone or whatever the suffering of others, it becomes even harder to rest or to, like, enjoy
yeah.
the good things in your life, because you're like, why should I be allowed to laugh right now when other people can't laugh? You know, we all feel those things, mm. and there are times where it really gets to me, but I think a really important thing to remember is you cannot support others unless you are able to hold yourself up strong, you know? So if you can't even stand, how can you possibly put your arm around someone
mm.
and help them stand up too? So yeah, this year has been a really lovely journey of figuring out first how to rest without guilt, and just be grateful and to enjoy that space and that time and that quiet, and also to really feel the joy and to really love being around my friends, and to not feel guilty if you pamper yourself once because, you know, you've had a long year. I've had like 3 massages this year.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
I read the article where you were like, it's an old article where you'd never been to a day spa or something.
I'd never been. This year was my first time.
Woo-hoo! I'm yeah. so stoked for you.
Thank you. I had my first facial this year. I was like, wow, this and? Is amazing. Loved it. I definitely fell asleep.
Mm.
So I don't actually know what happened, but my skin felt great.
Yeah.
And I was very relaxed afterwards. Yeah. And I'm privileged because I have the resource now and the time to do those things for myself. But I also acknowledge that I worked hard to gain those resources in that time.
Yeah.
By doing these things and by being as full a person as I can be and expressing and feeling joy and feeling the lightness of the world, then you can really go into the darkness and acknowledge that without, you know, crumbling is my hope.
Mm.
So I think self-care is not just like something we say to go, oh, you need a rest or you need to take a day off. I think it's actually a really vital part of our well-being, and it allows us to be more sturdy and more resilient for all the shit that's going down right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I hope that my self-love then can translate into community love.
I get it. You also pose the question, what does our search for purpose look like in a world that becomes more dystopian by the day?
Did I fucking say that?
Wow. Where are you sitting with the whole purpose quest at the moment? Are you there yet? Is that a thing for you?
Yes. It slightly modifies week to week, day to day. Mm. But the overall purpose is to gain enough resource that I can help others.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I think that's what a lot of people want to do, right? It's never really been within grasp until a couple of years ago, but that is the ultimate goal. I just keep working hard, doing what I do, maintain and uphold like a certain quality of life along the way, nourish community along the way, and then eventually try to help everyone that's around me. And it might be, depending on how much you can help, you know, that circle might be smaller or wider, but it doesn't matter. I feel like as long as I can add positive value to someone's life,
yes,
I feel like I'm winning, you know?
Yeah. There's a book by this guy called Martin Seligman. It's called Flourish. And I bring it up because I have an issue. But my thing with purpose, in air quotes, is that for me, I find it's really like, it sounds like a really finite, immovable, concrete thing.
Oh, no.
Where it's like, I want something to be a little bit more, I want something to have flex.
Yeah.
Because the thing with purpose is if I see my purpose is XYZ today, and then I get it, and then what? But yeah. So this book, it's really good. So, but what you're kind of talking about how like giving back to community. So he's like this psychologist who came up with this model. It's like you need these five things to be like flourishing, and it's like a moving. It's kind of like,
oh, I'd be keen to read that.
It's a bit academic-y, but the model, okay. So he's basically saying that there are five building blocks to well-being, and the key is to like increase each.
Mm.
So it's PERMA, which stands for positive emotion, engagement, which is like utilizing your skills and strengths,
okay,
where you can get into the flow state. So you're being challenged, but you feel like you're utilizing your skills. There's relationships, so it's like being connected to others, community, and meaning, which is serving something bigger than yourself.
Mm.
I've worked jobs in the past when there's been like zero meaning, and it's like burnout was rife. And then accomplishment, so that's achievement as a journey as opposed to a means to an end.
Nice. I like those last two.
Yeah. So the theory or the science is like all of these things are like all good. And when you're in that space, you're not doing it by yourself. It impacts everyone around you.
Hell yeah. We are connective creatures. Like,
yeah,
you're lying if you think that what you do and say now does not affect like your friend twice removed, or like, you know, you make ripples in your environment.
Yeah.
It's interesting because to me, purpose and meaning are kind of the same thing. Life is meaningless unless you add meaning to it. Mm. So you can create your own, or you can adopt someone else's if you really like it, you know? Suddenly really aware of saying you know a lot. You know.
Do you know what? I have not noticed it, but when I'm editing, we'll see how.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you just like, edit some out?
Just add a bleep every time and then people will think I'm swearing. Yeah. And so purpose for me is flexible because my purpose is the active thing that's going to keep me moving and to keep me, to keep my quality of action or movement the way I want it to be at its peak, I guess. Mm. Whereas the goals that you set along the way, those are things that you can achieve, and they're tangible things. There's specific timeline or specific something that you actually can grasp. But that's not my purpose. The purpose is what's driving me to achieve those tasks or goals, and eventually dream.
How good are you at dreaming?
Do you mean just like physiologically? Because no, like, very... I forget all my dreams.
Like visioning.
Envisioning, yeah. What does it mean to be good at dreaming?
I used to be really bad at it. I used to be afraid to. You know, they say like dream big, which sounds fucking corny, but to even consider that things could actually be way more amazing. Even though I'm like super privileged, shit is really great. But yeah, I probably didn't know how to do that in my 20s.
Yeah. I think that relates back to the whole claiming space thing of going, do I even dare to dream? Because if I can't get it, that means that I failed, you know?
Yeah.
It's
easier not to, I think.
Yeah. I think if you fail, like, a goal, then maybe, you know, you can be upset about that. Let's say you wanted to do such and such by the year 2022 and you didn't do it. And you're like, oh, fuck. It's all right, you set a new goal. But the dream is, like, something that takes a lifetime. For me, it was very simple when I was younger. I just dreamt of leaving Palmerston North. That was it.
Hey, Look at you now.
I can live in my dream.
You're living your dream.
When I was in drama school, I just dreamed about making a living doing what I love.
Wow.
Doing that.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Doesn't mean that I feel like, oh, I've accomplished that. I can just do this. You just keep activating that and then, you know, letting yourself dream about something else. Mm. It can all be fluid.
Are you a, like, a 5-year plan person?
Hell no. My sister is.
Really?
She's very good at it. She said she would have a house by this time. She did it. She said she would have a child by this time. She did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Although she's reconsidering the second child now because she's like, oh, the first one's a handful. But no, I'm not that type of person. I'm more like, but I'm very practical in a way because let's say I have the dream of making money off acting. Then I have like these smaller goals that I want to achieve, but I don't set a timeline necessarily.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I want to do a big theater gig or I want to do a feature film. And then you have the smaller tasks along the way. I will practice this many times of this thing to practice towards that.
Are you disciplined?
It comes and goes. It really comes and goes. I'm someone that needs to be involved in something and then I can work my ass off, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm in a project, I can find the way to be totally invested in that project and then I will give it everything. I'll have like almost no social life. I will just dedicate everything to that. Mm. And then the project will end. I'll get mildly depressed. And then I would like just stay up until 3 a.m. watching anime that I don't even care about. And, you know.
Have you watched Castlevania?
Oh. You know, I watched an episode and I didn't get hooked. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We can talk about that.
Okay, we can. Oh, yeah, move on. Oh my God. We can move on.
I'm so sorry. I just finished. I'm keeping up with Jujutsu Kaisen right now.
Oh, what are you watching on?
Crunchyroll.
Oh man. I would love to watch it, but I feel like there's too much. Can I catch up? I don't know.
Jujutsu Kaisen you can catch up.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Because it looks cool. I feel like I would like it.
It's awesome. Yeah. And they're only like 13 or 14 episodes. I could be wrong about that. Don't quote me on that. But it felt fast.
Okay.
And saying that, I've also watched every single episode of Naruto, so, and all the movies. So everything feels short compared to that. Still, it's only like 2.5 seasons, so.
Okay. That's on the list. What even were we talking about?
Discipline. So yes, I can be disciplined when I have deadlines and like something to achieve with other people and accountability, but I'm less disciplined when it comes to like my own practices. Like I'm only just this year starting to form some sort of fitness practice that's like fun and something that I can achieve. I cannot tell you the amount of times I've signed up to a gym and never gone. Literally doing that right now with Anytime Fitness. Sorry, Anytime.
Oh dear. Thinking back about when you've been burnt out, what did you learn about yourself through that experience?
I can be so not fine while also being fine. Maybe it's not a learning, but it's a reminder of what I'm like when I'm not at full capacity. Because you might still, you know, go to your friend's show or like hang out with people and you're just not, half of you's not there.
Yeah.
Because you just want to be in bed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, I wish I could be more zingy right now. I wish I had more to contribute in this conversation. I always get a bit down in the dumps when I'm burnt out because I'm like, why did I let it get to this? You know? Recently I had a nasty flu, which was like hard out flu for a few weeks. And then I just was no stamina for 2 more weeks after that.
Oh, your body's saying no.
My body was screaming, alarm bells ringing, like, just stop doing stuff.
Yeah.
But it's right. And then I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. I need to reevaluate.
Yeah. What's been taking up your headspace recently?
Oh, nice. Marwan asked that too.
Did he?
Maybe he stole it from you. He asked it.
Shout out to Marwan.
Shout out Marwan. Headspace recently has been, I've been reading this book, Digital Minimalism. It's basically, you know, what it sounds like. You just minimalize your technology use into what things really matter to you and what really helps you with your life. So I've been thinking a lot about my preparation because I'm going to attempt a digital detox, which isn't cold turkey everything. It's just setting hard rules and dropping most things in order to reintroduce them a month later.
Is this like time limits and stuff? Is that
time limits? You can work it your own way. So I use Messenger to keep in touch with family and friends. So I'll do like, I don't know, a morning and evening check or something like that, and accept calls. But that's been taking up headspace. How addicted am I into scrolling? Like, putting my phone across the room from me at night and waking up in the morning, and the first thing I do is I roll over to check the time on my phone. And then, of course, you know what that leads to. I would pick it up and do something with it. So it was kind of wild to notice my body automatically doing those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. And then also Gaza. But I think that's everyone, eh?
They do it.
Yeah.
What's some advice you'd give to your 16-year-old self?
Hey, kid. It's gonna be all right. And not in that voice. I don't know why I did that voice. 16-year-old Jess was just finding friends, which was cool. Honestly, I would just say keep doing what you're doing and trust the process. Because I could also tell her, like, this is what's coming and be prepared for this. But you can never be prepared for what you don't know. You can only live it and do your best to adapt. And she turned out all right, I think.
Yeah, I think so. How spiritual would you say you are?
I have no, like, I'm not attached to any system or group, but I have a sense of spirituality. I believe we're all connected in the universe. We are all star people looking at star stuff, as Carl Sagan once said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Why do you ask?
I ask that in every episode.
Oh, okay.
Well, not every, but recently it's been a lot. I think naturally a lot of people will tie it to religion, but I'm thinking more about, like, spirit. Like, why do our... You know, connection.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. I'm kind of interested in how people answer that question.
Mm. Yeah, when it comes to what is unsensed or sensed but not seen.
Intangible.
Intangible, yeah, that's the word. Those things obviously exist. And that's another reason why it's impossible for you not to have an impact on the people around you. Because even something like the energy you're projecting into the world or what you think about yourself, people read those things.
Yeah.
And we don't understand yet how we read those things, but we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel so, like we've all been in situations or in rooms we've been with people, whether we know them well or not, that will just be taking, or like there's some like, or you'll leave a room and you'll be like, fucking hell. We'll have a conversation with someone and you'll leave and be like, holy shit, that was intense. And it will, and it might colour the rest of your day.
Totally. Some people have very, very strong energies is the only word I can think of right now. And I believe sometime in the future some people will figure out the science of this or make a really great guess at it. But I think it also matters, like, the combination of, like, your particular energy versus this particular energy and such and such.
Makes
and
that's the thing. Yeah.
And that's when we know, like, oh, you're going to be a bestie for life versus you're a friendly acquaintance.
Yeah.
It's not...
It's like chemistry.
Yeah. It's chemistry. They will figure out the science behind that, I bet.
Finish these sentences.
Okay. I'm feeling inspired by hot Asian wahine in Tamaki Makaurau doing their thing and being unapologetic about it. I'm really looking forward to summer and beach.
I'd love to be known for.
I'd love to be known for inspiring people to do what they didn't think they could do.
Amazing. Jess!
Hey.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible thanks to Foundation North, Creative New Zealand, and Big Fan. If you like that, please rate, review, and share the podcast. And don't forget to sign up to the newsletter. The link is in the show notes. See you next time.